A dual episode today. I'm Fred Katz. I'm the host of Wizards After Dark, and I'm here with the host of Locked On Sixers, Keith Pompey.
And we're
going to talk about whatever the hell happened in this game where the Wizards beat the Sixers 119-113. Davis Bertans couldn't miss shots for a while, no matter what. Joel Embiid had 26 and 21, but it was a really sloppy 26 and 21. Where are we starting here?
You know, it's weird. I look at this two different ways. I look at it as, you know, the Wizards had a great win for them. You know, the Wizards came in here, three-game losing streak. They lost five of the last six. You know, the young guys played well. But then you look at the 76ers and you say, did the Sixers get exposed again? You know, I mean, when you look at it, you know, they had 21 turnovers and their two all-stars committed 15 of them. That's bad. You know, you look at the bench struggled in the first half, right? Tobias Harris looked like the $180 million man, but outside of him, you didn't get anything. And for a team that's picked to come out of the East, they come and they play a Washington team that's struggling and you lose. And not only that, this is their 10th consecutive loss here. So I think it's a good win for Washington, but if you're walking away from this game, you're scratching your head at the Sixers.
You know why I think they got exposed?
Mm-hmm.
It's not that Embiid and Simmons turned it over 15 times. It's the way they turned it over.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the Wizards could not have respected the Sixers shooting less.
Mm-hmm.
They were just doubling with the nearest guy on Embiid as aggressively as you possibly can. And it wasn't like when Embiid makes a move. It was just when he touches the ball, we're coming for you. And it was kind of a similar thing with Simmons. And I know Scott Brooks thinks that Embiid is ridiculously good. Mm-hmm. And I know he thinks that Ben Simmons is ridiculously good. He makes that clear every time he talks about those guys, no matter the context. But his actions show that he doesn't really trust the shooting on the rest of the roster. And to me, the big thing with Horford as a fit has always been Horford's a good shooter. But what we've seen in playoff series with him, like what we saw during the Milwaukee-Boston series last year, was Milwaukee was betting not that he wasn't going to make a high percentage of his threes. It was just that no matter how you guard him, he's really not going to take that many of them. That, like, he's not capable of, you know, Davis Bertans got really hot tonight and he took 13 threes. And Bertans is a different kind of player than Horford, obviously. But you're betting Horford's never, no matter how hot he gets, no matter how open he is, it's just not in his personality to take 13 threes. And you can help off of a guy if you believe that to be true, even if he's a good shooter. And you can help off of Simmons. And Tobias Harris is a very good player, but you can help off Tobias Harris. And that's what the Wizards did tonight. And it made Embiid is just more talented than everybody on the Wizards, so he can get his numbers. But he looked uncomfortable at times, even though, like, he's so much better than Mo Wagner. But Mo Wagner is annoying as hell. He's unbelievably annoying. And guys were coming over and being feisty and physical with him. And there were moments tonight where he looked uncomfortable, and that's where you get the turnovers.
I mean, you're exactly right. And I mean, that's where you get the turnovers. And the thing about Al Horford, you know, on a night like tonight or last night, you know, Al Horford is a guy, like you said, you know, he's not going to get a lot of shots. I mean, he shot 4 for 8. He was 3 for 5 on threes. You know, to me, that's a guy that, you know, you want him taking more shots. And here's something that also I look at that's a little, I'm not going to say alarming, but you look at Raul Neto. He's a guy who shot 4 for 5. He went 3 for 4. He had 11 points. He was hot in the first half. Like, in the first half, it was like he was one of their top guys. And he only played 12 minutes. Now, to me, when you have people struggling, people turning the ball over, there's no one respecting anyone else on the floor like you alluded to, you got to go with this guy. I mean, you know, you got to say, look, buddy, you know, we believe in you. You're playing well. You know, you got to, he had to play more minutes, in my opinion, looking at that box score. So, you know, it's just crazy. I mean, it to me, like you said, they got exposed. Scott Brooks knew what he was doing. He challenged the Sixers, other guys to beat him. But one of the guys who could help beat him only played 12 minutes. I mean, to me, that's bad. To me, that's bad.
So you know what I'm thinking when I'm watching Bertans go off tonight?
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, all right, he's doing this in front of the Sixers. How much are the Sixers willing to give up for that guy in February? Because they've got draft picks. They've still got mm-hmm. a ton of second-round picks.
Mm-hmm.
And Bertans a free agent. He get his bird rights. I don't know if the Wizards are going to trade him or not, but he's a free agent upcoming this year, and there's that Spurs adage. You don't want to pay Jonathan Simmons. You want to find the next Jonathan Simmons. And Bertans is having a hell of a year. I mean, he's making almost 4 threes a game now. He's on pace to make 300 threes.
Wow.
He's on pace to become the third player in NBA history to make 295 threes.
Mm-hmm.
The other two are Stephen Curry and James Harden. Curry, Harden, Bertans apparently. Which is, it's unbelievable how well he is shooting this year. He's shooting like 45% from three on like 9 attempts a game. It's an unbelievable season. He's a four who moves unbelievably off the ball. I think he fits with any contender, and there are more teams that believe themselves to be contenders this year. I feel like maybe they're one piece away. I feel like there's going to be an upcoming free agent market that's pretty dry. I feel like there's going to be a big market for him. Now, maybe the Wizards want to re-sign him. He's a really good role player. He's an excellent role player. But, like, he would look great in Philly.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be great on the Lakers, though I don't know what the Lakers could give mm-hmm. up for him because they traded everything for Anthony mm-hmm. Davis. He could be great in Miami. He'd be great in Toronto. But, like, Philly, we talk about you're not going to help off Davis Bertans. I don't care, you know, maybe Embiid has a terrible mismatch on him. But you're not going to help off Davis Bertans. Like, that gives that team an extra shooter. I wonder, like, do you think they end up in the market for, if not Bertans, a guy like that come February?
Yeah, they have to. I mean, it may not be a power forward, but, yeah, they have to bring in somebody off the bench who's going to be able to get shots. I mean, that's the one thing that they don't have. I mean, you have a guy like Trey Burke who can get his own shot, but the coach just doesn't play him a lot. So, the meaning to me, they'll have to go get someone else. Now, my thing is, if I'm the Wizards, and this guy fits in well, and I know what the Wizards are going through this year, I don't know. He looks like somebody that can help me in the future.
Oh, he can help.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no question he can help.
Yeah.
If this is the player he is,
yeah.
If he's 14 points a game, and he's going to shoot 4 for 9 from three every night. Like, that's what he's shooting on average. If he's just going to shoot 4 for 9 from three, and he's going to give you 14, and he's not a bad defender. He's pretty mobile. He's pretty good guarding screens for a guy who's 6'10". He's not a good rebounder, but he can play the three. He can play the four. If that's the player he is, he can help you. I need to ask around.
They would take him.
I just need to ask around in terms of how much he's going to make.
Yeah,
because there are teams with cap space this summer. There are not a lot of players who weren't giving a ton of that cap space to. So, to me, this feels like it's going to be, I mean, how many times in the history of the NBA have we seen the owners say, all right, I've got money to spend, but I'm just going to hold on to it and use it next year. Like, to me, this feels like it's not necessarily going to be 2016 all over again because mm-hmm. that was insane. But it seems to me like this upcoming summer is going to be the summer of regrettable contracts. And Bertans is an excellent role player. But if it's going to cost you – it's one thing when he's on his contract now. It's another thing if you've got to pay him 52 for – I'm just making up a number. It's another thing if you've got to pay him 52 yeah. over 4 years. Now, all of a sudden – you're taking up cap space in a rebuilding team. Presumably this team isn't going to be that much further along next year than it is this year. And he, to me, is a guy, he's the typical guy who's insanely valuable on a really good team and not as valuable on a bad one. Not that he's old, he's 26, 27, but he's so much more valuable. Role players like him are so much more valuable on really good teams. So if he's the missing piece, oh yeah, pay him if you feel like he's that. But if he's just another piece, I don't think he's as valuable, you know? Mm-hmm. Am I expressing that well?
No, yeah. I understand. And see, the thing with it is, if you are the Sixers and you want to go after him, yeah, you would want to trade him because, you know, they're going to, you know, with luxury tax and everything like that, it, and as far as, like, not really just a luxury tax, but as far as, let's just say, you know, you want to get them, but you probably won't be able to afford them because somebody else is going to throw some money at them. Now, first of all, if I'm the Sixers, I'm not going to give them $52 million. I'm sorry. I mean, I know the guy was not.
I just said a number.
I know, yeah. But I'm also saying that I'm not doing that if I'm them. But at the same time, for a nice price, you know, I think that, you know, I would be willing to do that, especially after last year where you said, you know, you gave it Tobias Harris $180 million. Now, he's playing well, but you gave it to him, and you know, with the because you knew that you needed to have him. You're looking at this type of guy. He's a guy that they kind of need to have, especially for right now. If I'm Brett Brown, I'm saying, look, y'all, well, you get rid of some of those second-round picks. You know, get rid of let's make a player. What we can do is we can give a player with an expiring contract, or maybe we can give up one of our young guys. You know, maybe they can think they could, Wizards think they could build with them. But if I'm Brett, knowing how this team, the Sixers, just lost to the Wizards, how the Sixers lost 7 of their last 9 road games, and this might have been their worst loss, but they lost to some bad teams too, right? Other than that. So if I'm Brett Brown and you see what this guy has, I really would like to have him on the roster from the coach right now, and then we got to see what we're going to do moving forward. Now, even if you can't re-sign him, dude, the Sixers, if the Sixers don't make it to the NBA Finals or at least the Eastern Conference Finals, this season is a failure. And on the you have to win on the road unless you get home court advantage, you know, in these games, in the playoff games. And what I saw right now is a team that's going to struggle on the road. That's what I saw.
Why are they struggling so much on the road? What is it? Like, it's not like, I mean, they're still relatively young, but they're not inexperienced. They've gone through stuff. This is year 3 of them being good.
Well, they get a lot of energy at home, a lot. I think on the road, it's just away from home. I mean, it's hard. It's like Embiid couldn't even explain it. Brett Brown couldn't explain it. It's hard. It's hard to explain, but, you know, they get away. They get in a different routine. I mean, it's, I don't know, they're just not good away. I mean, the crowd gets hyped up. Like, I think they get a lot of energy from their home crowd, a lot. And when you go on the road, you don't have that. Not only that, it's like they have so many new players. So it's kind of like, you know, you're on the road, you got to, like, a lot of times you're not going to hear stuff. You got to know what the other person's thinking at certain times. They don't know what each other's thinking. You know what I mean? They just don't. And this isn't new. Like, they would struggle on the road last year. Like, last year they went to Atlanta and lost. You know, and they went to Orlando, I mean, and lost. You know, it was just, I don't know, man. I don't know what it is. I really don't. I know this is the new NBA where a lot of teams don't practice a lot with load management and all this other stuff. And, you know, it's hard when, A, you have a bunch of new players. I think they have 3 guys on the team who was, they have 4 guys. Well, they have 3 guys tonight because the other ones are in the G League. But they had three guys who were basically four, because one was a two-way, but four who were on the team at the start of last year. Four. Three of them played. So you got all these new faces coming in and no practice. And, you know, at home you could ride off the energy. The crowd gets quiet when you have the ball. You know what I mean? You can say stuff. I just think that it's just too many new pieces and everything isn't just working out well for him if I explained it the right way.
What do you think of Rui?
Oh, he's nice. In the
preseason, he's been really good, like four straight games now.
Oh, man. In the preseason, you know what? It was weird because, you know, he goes to Gonzaga. I have much respect for Gonzaga. But I really didn't know too much about him. And, you know, you see all the people from Japan. They come over, ladies asking me questions about him. I'm trying to be nice, but I'm, like, BSing the whole way. You know what I mean? So she's asking me questions. And then they played the Sixers in the preseason, and they had Al Horford on them. And he blew past Al on several plays. And I'm like, okay, this guy is nice. Also noticed that he plays hard. Like, you know, he gets a lot of tip-ins. He gets a lot of other stuff. Like, he always plays hard. And that really impressed me. So I'm looking at him now, and I'm like, they have something special here. This guy is going to be good. I mean, he's already good, but, you know, it's one of those things that this, at first I was questioning the draft pick. Is that the right guy for him? But now I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay. You know, they knew that that was a great move by the Wizards front office. I really like him. I really like him.
You know what's a really interesting evolution? And I've, like, spent so much time on this podcast talking about incremental improvement from him, and how stuff's not going to be linear, but you just got to kind of look at, like, a month in, two months in, did he improve on the thing that he needed to improve in a month ago, you know? And you need to look for subtle signs, because it's not always there. But so after they played the Clippers on Sunday, and I talked about it on my podcast after that game, I said, you know, in that game, and when they played the Lakers the game before that, he had moments where he's going right at the rim and he's finishing strong. And the first 15 games or so, 12 games, whatever it is, he was really mid-range reliant. And he's still mid-range reliant. More than I think the Wizards would want him to be when he gets to his peak, which is still obviously very far away.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going right at the rim and he's finishing strong, and not with layups. He's trying to dunk stuff. Maybe sometimes he's even in ill-advised moments trying to dunk it when he doesn't need to. But he knows he's got to finish strong. Scott Brooks had a conversation with him after a few games saying, like, you can't lay stuff in. You're not going up against West Coast Conference players anymore. You got to dunk, and that's what you have to do. So he starts trying to do that. He starts finishing stronger. He has a couple moments where he gets to the free throw line, which is something he still struggles with. He's not getting to the line. But he has a couple moments where he gets to the line where I think early in the year he's not going to do that. And I'm thinking, okay, now is the point of the season where Rui has realized he's got to go at the rim more. In order to be as efficient of a player as he can be, he's got to be a really good finisher at the rim. He's got to get to the free throw line. That's a great realization. And I'm expecting, because this is kind of how rookies think, because the game is so fast, they just kind of have to learn, okay, I was mid-range. You know what? Now I'm going to be going to the rim all the time for a while. I'm going to get comfortable doing that. And then you kind of learn when to do it, when not to do it, and you expand out. It's like anything else, you know? Tonight, Embiid sagged off him, because Embiid sags off everybody, because his strength is defending around the rim. And Embiid sags off him, and he just said, okay. And he was just taking 18-footers. And I thought he was going to be trying to challenge Embiid, which might not have gone great.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't. And I don't know if it was him being given his comfort zone, so he just took the comfort zone and didn't think about it, or if it was him saying, if it was a more sophisticated thought of, I would still like to go at the rim, but they're not giving it to me, so I'm just going to take what's there. I think it's very clear. He's talked about how his spacing was tough for him. Now he's more comfortable with NBA spacing and kind of how to make decisions on the floor. And I think the way that his feel is getting better. And that was the thing he was knocked for. And the fact that he started playing the game really late. And the fact that he was just kind of It's a cliche, but I think it really applied to him tonight. He was just kind of taking what the defense gave him. I think it's super encouraging. I mean, he was, what was he tonight? 27-7 on 11-18, 4-4 from the line. This is four straight games where he's been really good. He's very intriguing. He's very talented.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I mean, I really do. I think he's going to be, I mean, he's great. I mean, you know, when you get John Wall back, you already have Bradley, and you have Rui. I mean, his scoring will probably go down a little bit when John comes back. But I really like him. I mean, I think that he's a player. I think, you know, in the past, they always seem like they always try to get a guy who can go with those two. And then, you know, he looked good for a year, and then the second year, the guy kind of, like, fizzed out a little bit. But I think that this guy is special. And the thing is, like, you know, he started playing basketball late, like you said, and he has huge upside. I mean, he could mess around in a couple of years be the best player on the team. I mean, he could. I mean, just because he's so young and he's still learning things. And I'm telling you, the way his energy, the way he is with his energy right now is, to me, it speaks volumes. I mean, he had Al Horford looking old in that preseason game. Now, again, Al is 33. He's a younger guy. But it was to a point where you're like, oh, Al can't guard this guy. You know, it's going to get ugly. You know, it's really going to get ugly. And, you know, he's one, also a guy that I keep in contact. After that, you know, I try to check out the box scores. You know, sometimes I'll get on my phone and I may watch a couple Wizards games. He's someone that's going to be special. I mean, he is. He should be a first-team all rookie. I mean, he should be. I mean, I'm expecting him to play in the rookie challenge, whatever they call the game now. I mean, I think that he's special. He's, you know, a lot of the guys that the Sixers had as rookies, when they came in and we're talking about, like, a Nerlens Noel, a Jahlil Okafor, you know, Michael Carter-Williams, you know, even, like, Joel, Ben Simmons, Markelle Fultz. You know, he's better than most of them. I mean, and he didn't come in with the hype that they did. You know, a lot of them were lottery picks, you know, top three, four picks. And he, to me, is better than most of them.
And to your point, tonight, Horford guarded Wagner.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think part of that was Wagner hangs around the three-point line. And Embiid isn't, it's not going to be as punishing if Embiid is around the rim and he's guarding Hachimura as opposed to Wagner. But, you know, maybe they looked at what happened there too.
Yeah, he can't guard him. I mean, it's a bad matchup for him. It really is. I mean, you know, you look at Al Horford, and he's a guy, when he was a center, you know, he was more athletic. He was more mobile than most centers. So now you have him playing a young power forward. A young guy who can, you know, maneuver, that's just a bad matchup for Al. You know, it is now, if it was an old NBA where, you know, guys would post up and Al, you know, would lean on him and do stuff. Come here, Rook, I'm going to take you to school. But in this new NBA, the guy is just too athletic. He's just too athletic for him.
Anything else you want to chat about?
You know, I mean, I don't know. Like, where do you see the Wizards going from here?
I think you mean, like, the rest of the year?
The rest of the year. Yeah, I guess we can do that. I mean, is this something? I mean, they have a tough one. That would they play Miami tomorrow? And then the Clippers. Woo! But, I mean, do you see, I mean, all right, what are you looking, how do you see this season playing out for them? I mean, you know, right now we know that John's out. You know, Bradley's going to be an all-star again. You have Rui, you know. I mean, how do you see this season playing out? We know they're not going to make the playoffs, but, you know, what's the focus? What's the goal?
I think they're going to be about where they are right now. You know, something we didn't really talk about is this was their best defensive performance since really early in the season. And it is not a coincidence that their best defensive performance since early in the season comes without the two Thomases, Thomas Bryant and Isaiah Thomas. You look at the numbers with those guys on the floor, and the numbers are, the defensive numbers are really high. I mean, they have like a 122 defensive rating when both those guys are on the floor. And those guys were not on the floor today, and they defended. Isaiah Thomas could be back Friday in Miami. We'll see. I think one thing they really want to build on is just not be the worst defense of all time, which they almost are right now. Their actions say otherwise. So because they keep playing Isaiah Thomas, they keep starting Isaiah Thomas, and Thomas Bryant's getting a lot of time. And one thing that I think I'm really going to watch is how are they evaluating the young guys. So Thomas Bryant got paid last summer. He got 25 for 3 years. Mm-hmm. But he's still only 22 years old.
Yeah.
Same age as Mo Wagner. And I want to see how are they valuing Mo Wagner, who's been excellent this year,
mm-hmm.
and only had 5 points tonight. But I thought had a pretty good defensive game.
Mm-hmm.
He's just annoying to play against. Mm-hmm. Rebounded well, fouls too much, but mm-hmm. a lot of young bigs do. How are they evaluating Bryant versus Wagner? How are they evaluating Troy Brown and Bonga? What direction are they going in with the young guys? Because we know what Beal is.
Mm-hmm.
He's an all-star. He's a lead guard. And you know Wall is going to be back next year if all goes well with his health. So I think what I'm really looking at is just what decisions are they going to make with the young guys, and then what cultural and role player decisions around them are they going to make to show how they want to build around the young guys. So, like, are they going to keep playing Isaiah Thomas at starting point guard when their defense craters when he's on the floor? Are they going to say, you know what, Ish Smith is your defensive option at point guard? What's gone wrong? But are they going to say, like, you know what, Ish Smith, take the majority of the minutes now, and we'll see what happens? I mean, there's a lot of, like, weird young position player stuff where it's like, even with Justin Robinson and Chris Chioza, where Justin Robinson got the partially guaranteed contract, and Chris Chioza got the two-way, and now they're playing Chris Chioza over Justin Robinson. Eventually, if they play Chioza enough, his days are going to expire.
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to do? They obviously like Chioza over Robinson. At least Scott Brooks does. Mm-hmm. He keeps playing Chioza over Robinson every chance he gets. There are these roster questions, which with a new front office, we kind of have to learn how they think. And with each of those roster things, we're going to learn how they think. So that's kind of what more I'm looking for. And we can kind of see what kind of identity the organization is going for through those kinds of decisions the rest of the year. And that's my abstract and convoluted
mm-hmm.
answer to your basic question. You think they'll make the Sixers will make the Eastern Conference Finals?
Not with this roster. I mean, I think they'll have to. I think they'll have to make a trade. They'll have to get a shooter. They also need. Well, Tobias Harris is establishing himself into the closer, so he has been playing well, but they need help on the bench. They need someone who can come out and help them, right? They need it. Now, again, some people may say Josh Richardson didn't play. I believe he missed his fourth straight game. I get all that. But the thing is, it's like they need some consistent, sharp shooting off the bench, someone who can help space the floor, someone who can fulfill that role, and they just don't have it. You know, Mike Scott is a solid shooter. He's been, like, hot and cold lately, more cold than anything. The same thing with James Ennis. You know, he's known as a defender. They call him a two-way guy. But he's had some games where he's been playing out of this world. You're not going to get that all the time. Like, Raul Neto was 4-for-5 tonight, 3-for-4 on threes. You're not going to get that all the time. Because every time they may play well one night and then they struggle the next. You know, they need someone who they can really depend on, someone that's going to do it. And they don't have that person on the, they got a lot of good players, but they don't have a person that you can say, night in and night out, we know what you're going to give us. They don't have that.
Yeah. Anything to plug for the listeners before we wrap up?
I want to plug, following both of us on Twitter. I'm Pompey on Sixers. You're
just at Fred Katz.
At Fred Katz. And then, you know, just plug these two podcasts. I mean, you know, we're two guys covering our beat well. And if you want to get the Wizards stuff, follow my man Fred. If you want the Sixers stuff, you know, follow me and download both of us on you know, on wherever you can.
There you go. And just a note for everybody from iPod. This is obviously a free episode. I will not be back on Friday after the Heat game, but I will be back on Sunday with another free episode after the Clippers game. If you want the bonus episode I do once a week, you can log on to The Athletic, and you can subscribe for 40% off at theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark, and you can get a 40% off on an annual Athletic subscription there, and you don't just get Wizards stuff. Like, you get everything on The Athletic. So you get our Sixers coverage, and then our NFL coverage, and MLB coverage, and everything else that you want over there. All right.
All right. That's cool.
What a pod. What a game.
Yeah.
I did not expect the Wizards to win this game.
I did.
Well, we're already pessimistic beat writers 20 games into the season. I'll be back Sunday. You'll be back.
I'll be back on Saturday.
Well, there we go. We'll be back then, and we will talk to you guys then.